Welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm your host, Patrick Bolin, and we're going into right into this. We're on phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We finished up with...
This is movie seven.
This is movie seven. Right. And we're here with our marvelous guests, Larry and Ethan.
Hello.
Hello.
And we're just going to dive right into it. Now, this one is Iron Man 3.
Yes.
Now...
So, for quick note, that's the first character to get a third film.
Yes,
and Iron Man gets a third film before any of the other characters get a sequel.
That is so true.
If you think about it,
right, this came out before Thor 2.
Yes. Right. So and if you think about it, so like I said, this is the seventh film.
Mm-hmm.
There's been three Iron Man films. Plus Avengers, plus he had a brief appearance in Hulk at the end of Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in five of the first seven films. So it's very Iron Man centric.
Yes. Robert Downey Jr. centric. He was not in Thor at all.
No. He was not in Thor or Captain America, but in all the rest he was.
Yeah,
right. And a major character in four of the seven films. So.
Yes.
Well, absolutely.
And also this is... still showing Paramount when the film opens. The last one, because we kept on counting Hulk in our counting. This is actually the sixth one.
Because Hulk was distributed by Universal.
Universal, yes. Right.
And this one was actually distributed by Disney, but Paramount's logo stayed at the beginning of the film. That was the deal they worked out with Paramount, because
mm-hmm.
Paramount had the rights for the first six films.
Yes.
So... Paramount said, sure, we'll let you distribute it, but you got to keep our name on there. So,
yes.
But at the end credits, it actually says distributed by Walt Disney Films.
Yeah, actually, I think Thor 2 is the same thing. If I remember, it's Thor
Paramount?
2 starts up with Paramount, but like at the end, I mean, it's like the previews.
I don't think there's Paramount.
I don't think there's Paramount on that. I think this
is
the last one.
This is the year that they started selling it. I mean, it was sold... to Disney.
Because Disney was 2012, right?
This
came out in 2013.
Right. So now here's the thing is that Disney took a hands-off approach because they already had all these films in the pipeline. They either are in pre-production or in production, and Disney says, no, we see what you're doing. You showed us what you were doing. We're going to take a hands-off. We're not going to step in and tell you what to do as long as... you do this well.
As long as it keeps working, right? If it doesn't work, then
they'll step in.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, it's kept working. So
yes. Yes. So this opens again with no theme music.
Right.
It opens with him doing
talking. Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Just like Iron Man 2, didn't it? It opened with him speaking? Or that was just music?
I think it was music.
Yeah.
Listeners, tell us. Tweet us.
Now... it opens with him talking about everything, and then mm-hmm. he does a flashback, just like...
Right.
The first one.
Right.
So it was very formulaic with this, and then it opens up, and he's just like, well, no, I got to start over. Let me start this from the very beginning, and then he goes through the whole entire thing.
Right.
Well, he does the flashback to 1999.
The burn Switzerland. It's Y2K. It's December 31st, 1999.
Right. Right. Now, here's an interesting fact, is if you start this film 33 minutes before midnight on New Year's Eve, when they go happy...
I read it was like 5 minutes.
5 minutes into it?
Some seconds, yeah.
Yeah, so you're able to align it so the New Year happens the same time as it does in the film.
Yeah, no, it's pretty early. It's
not
33 minutes.
And now
like
they introduce some other main villains of Iron Man in this. The AIM.
The AIM Corporation or organization, whatever you want to call it.
That's a
versus
major
Stark.
Yes, that is a major thorn in the comic book.
In the comics, AIM was S.H.I.E.L.D.'s rival agency, basically.
Ah, okay, so it's much even deeper then.
Oh, yeah, this goes back to the early 60s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they also introduced...
Well, you know how they're important. They have T-shirts and logos.
I want one of those.
Right.
I'm
sure they're out there.
Oh, I hope so. Now, let's see here.
And the other character is, of course, the Mandarin.
Yes.
Right, the man.
Now, they had a tiptoe with this one, because in the comic book, it's...
Well, ironically, the character playing the Mandarin, Ben Kingsley, is of a no Mandarin... I mean, he's half Indian, half British, so he's technically Yeah. Another part of Asia, but anyway, that's I digress on that.
In the comic books, when the Mandarin was introduced, there's no way of tap dancing right. It was slightly racist in the comics.
Oh, okay. I get
because he was very oriental.
And this is
very
in the
evil.
60s?
This is in the
60s. This is
in the
late 60s.
60s, okay.
Because they based him off the character in Flash Gordon,
Ming
the Merciless. Yes. Okay, now that makes a lot of sense. Yes.
So,
who was the baddie of the baddies in Flash
Gordon?
But that
was
an
oriental-looking character, too.
Yes, and a very racist kind of caricature.
But that was from the
40s. Oh, of course, right. Which, of course, he was evil because of Japan and da-da-da-da-da.
Right. So when I heard that they were going to have the Mandarin in here, I was going to like, how are they going to get around this?
Right. So, because he's not ethnically Han Dynasty Chinese at all, he's actually...
They shifted it to, like, a Middle Eastern type of character.
Well, right, and think about it, in 2013, you know, the United States has pulled out of Iraq, but the Afghanistan war is still, you know...
Right,
and it also ties to the first one, because they talked about the 10 rings, which the Mandarin has 10 magical rings in the comics, which they don't even talk about here.
Right, but Tony touches on, you know, that thing in the cave. He's alluding to Iron Man 1, where he's captured, he's in the cave in Afghanistan, yada yada. Yes.
One Easter egg in the beginning scene in Burn, but at the very beginning where they show Tony's walking through the party, there's a brief cameo by the same doctor that was in the cave with him.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And if you go back and watch Iron Man 1, he says, have we met before? And he said, yes. Iron Man 1. Mm-hmm. He says, yes, we did once at a party or something like that.
And the guy says that in this one, too?
No, he says that in Iron Man 1.
But he's in
and
the
scene. He's in the scene. And
oh, because this is the party.
Yes.
Right.
And Tony shakes his hand. Sorry, I'm just getting the timeline together.
Right, because this is before the case.
This is
1999.
Right, not 2007 or 2008.
Yeah,
okay.
What's interesting is Captain Marvel takes place in 1995. This is 99.
So Marvel is before this.
Yeah, so I wonder if there's going to be any hints in Captain Marvel about Robert Downey Jr. Oh, geez, he's going to be in this one too, isn't he? Anyway, that's no surprise.
Right.
Okay, now they hint on AIM. We went through that. Aldrich Killian, which was from the comic books, and the Extremis program. They talk because his girlfriend, One Night Stand, was somebody that, in the comic books, they went to college together. She went off on the biology end, he went off on the tech end. But she kind of genetically altered the body where he technically did stuff.
Right, because in that opening scene when they go up to the hotel,
mm-hmm. Happy's there.
Happy, like, tears off part of the plant and that triggers...
Well, yeah, she goes, everything was unstable, and it grows back, and it explodes.
And then when it explodes, Happy jumps on it.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Yeah. He says, you can get off me now, I'm fine.
Yeah. By the way, another side note, so this was, of course, the first Iron Man film that Favreau was not directing.
Yes.
Although he's still in the film as Happy, and so what I read is that he actually kind of enjoyed doing this because he was able to just let loose and be happy and not have to worry about directing the film.
No pun intended.
Right.
Right. He's not directing. He's an actor.
Yeah, because, you know, having to take one hat off and put the other one on, you know, directing hat and then the acting hat, it wears on you.
Right. He was able to kind of, you know, let loose.
Yes.
Have a little fun with the role.
Yes. And he did an excellent job with this. And I would like to see more of him happy in these films, but, you know, anyway.
Well, he did have a brief part in Spider-Man Homecoming.
That is true.
With Tony, so.
That is true.
We will see him again in Far From Home.
Crossing fingers. Now, then they kind of bring it forward to the present.
Right.
And he's having PTSD, yes. He keeps having panic attacks. He's having bad dreams. And the only way he's able to deal through this is tinkering. And so
and he says, you know, I can't sleep. I can't. And he's telling everybody.
He's on edge. And it's
PTSD from his experience in Avengers in the Battle of New York, being in the wormhole and
in the dream where he's in bed with Pepper Potts, he's sleeping and he's like, psh, and
he's flashing back to when
they're showing the Battle of New York and then they show him going through the wormhole and carrying the bomb and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, even before that, there's the scene where he's out at the restaurant with Rhodey.
Right,
and the kid asked him for an autograph, and it's a crayon drawing of him. And he asked him about New York and going into the wormhole, and he starts having a panic attack.
The little kid who he
says, "I loved you in Christmas Story.
And he kind of looks like the kid, not exactly, but it's a cute little thing.
Right, because he has the glasses.
The glasses and the hair. And he says, you know, how'd you get through the wormhole or something? And that, like, he, like, freezes.
And he runs out of the restaurant and jumps into the suit and flies off.
And Jarvis actually says, you know, he says, what's wrong? Did I get poisoned? I have a heart attack? Is my brain open?
Diagnostics.
Your heart is fine. He goes, no, brain is fine.
He goes, I believe you've had a panic attack. He goes, me? Not me.
I have actually had a panic attack that bad.
Really?
Yes. In fact, it was, I would say, a couple of notches worse than that, because I actually, you've heard of sleep paralysis?
Mm-hmm.
Where you wake up and you can't move.
I've heard of that.
Oh, okay.
It's because you wake up, you've come out of a deep sleep, and you can't move anything. And you're like, oh my God, what's going on? I'm paralyzed. And it wears off after a few minutes, and you're able to move again. Okay.
Right. And then it as far as with the tinkering too, even before the scene where he has the nightmare, Pepper comes home, and he has the suit.
Like the automated suit.
The automated suit.
The remote control suit. Right.
Because he's down in the basement tinkering.
Right, and I think it's him. I thought it was him.
I thought it was him too the first time I saw it, and then she realizes it's not.
I'm going to tell you how that refers to Iron Man 2 after these messages.
Cool.
Okay, we'll be right back, everybody. And we're back. Maybe I really should get a hotel room. Anyway, now, Tony puts in 49 implants into his body.
Like in his arms.
All over his body.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and it's so he's able to remote control his armor. Okay? Now, each part is able to, it's got its own little remote control rockets and things, so it's able to come to him from where he's able at. And obviously, since the movie showed, that armor was in California. I was in Tennessee, and he made it come to Florida.
Right.
So that's thousands of miles that he's able to do this, probably through satellite control. But if you notice that each armor builds on something from the previous one. Now, in Iron Man 2, Whiplash controlled a whole bunch of drones remote control-wise.
Okay.
Right.
And he never had anything like that before.
So this is the bridge, basically.
Right, because Whiplash, they were wanting Whiplash to build
armor,
and he's like, no, drones are better.
Drones are better.
Right.
And so he took the armors and obviously made them so they're remote controlled, and they're probably all still hollow, and that's why he packed them full of explosives. And therefore, he was able to control them through the suit. He had a laptop, he was working on it, then he left, got into his own suit, and there through the suit, he was remote controlling all these drones.
You're talking about at the end of the
final battle sequence.
Right.
So Tony went, hey, that's not such a bad
idea. That's a good idea. That's an upgrade.
That's an upgrade. And so he does all this. He first of all makes it so he's able to control all the armors. Then he puts the implants in it so he's able to then draw an armor to him he's away from an armor.
Right.
And that's one of the things we see him tinkering with in the beginning, where he's in the basement and he's
listening to
Christmas. And he's having the... What's listening to what?
Christmas music.
The Christmas music. He's got the parts flying on
his body. It's kind of working, then it goes awry, and then it's like attacking him, basically. So, you know.
Which, by the way, this film... is a Christmas movie. It's set at Christmas. So,
is it? Which it's like Die Hard. Is that a Christmas music?
Bruce Willis at the roast of Bruce Willis said it's not a Christmas movie.
But the studio that made it said it was.
Yes, and again, for the 30th, because that was 1988, Die Hard, the 30th anniversary DVD had Christmas. Like Christmas packaging on it.
Now, would you consider this a Christmas film because it takes place at Christmas time?
You know, I didn't think of it that initially, but seeing it again recently, yeah, I mean, you know, there's the Christmas, there's the big teddy bear Christmas gift, there's Christmas trees,
well,
there's ornaments.
More, is that a Christmas gift, or would you say that I'm so
sorry? No, that was a Christmas, gift. I think it was supposed to be a Christmas gift.
Yeah, that was, yeah. No, no, was
yeah, but the, I saw an article right around the holidays, or this year, that where it said, if Die Hard's a Christmas movie, so is Iron Man 3. And it was like explaining why Iron
Man
3 was.
Right, because they're at Stark Industries in the beginning, there's Christmas ornaments there,
and
Christmas
they show
trees.
It's Christmas Eve when... Well, it's no Christmas Eve is when at the end of the film. So this is a few days before Christmas.
Correct.
There's snow on the ground,
yes,
right,
and everything like that.
When he gets to Tennessee,
Right. And then when he tells Jarvis, you know, when he after Happy gets blown up and he does the three dimensional thing, and he's like, okay, he goes, what were you looking at? I thought that was a little bit of a stretch when he's looking, doing that line of eyesight from Happy and the pointing of the finger,
right?
Well, but. You know, that could be anything.
Right, it's a movie, but right when they're at Mann's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, they show Christmas decorations. So it's you get the feel of the holiday season.
And apparently, I read this. This is the Christmas theme is a bit of a trademark of the director of this film, Shane Black.
Yes.
The other films that he's directed that are set at Christmas time include. The original Lethal Weapon.
That's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
That's a
Last Boy Scout.
Ah.
And Long Kiss Goodnight, and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
So
Kiss Bang Bang. Wow.
So all of them have a Christmas setting, and so apparently that's one of his themes. I'm imagining he brought that into the film. So
I wonder if he's using the same trees and Christmas trees in there. because don't forget, Raimi uses the same car in all his films.
Samuel Raimi?
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah. Like Evil Dead or the one with...
I mean, it's like same, like cars in the background?
No,
or?
The same car.
Oh,
like
really?
From his very first film, it was a red something, 67 something.
Listeners, Facebook us, email us, tweet us. Yes. What this is,
but
I'm drawing a blank.
It was in Spider-Man.
Okay.
And then he brought it back for Evil Dead 3 or whatever
okay.
it was.
Okay.
So, yeah, so maybe, it's a running gag for him, too.
Right.
But, okay. Oh, we've kind of bounced around a little bit, but the Mandarin is introduced because he keeps...
Interrupting television broadcasts.
Right, right.
And then that's...
There's a cyber attack. I mean, this is, this is a very modern... I mean, they're all modern movies, but they're really keeping us up to date, what's happening
in
the real world.
Bringing... bringing the villain character into a more 21st century role of having him be a terrorist and a cyber terrorist.
Right, cyber terrorist, cyber attacks.
It's made to look at least that he's part of some, radical terrorist organization somewhere in the Middle East.
Right.
Oh, and since the flashback was supposed to take place in 1999,
right?
When when they go to 2012. Because in the film, this is like that happened 13 years ago.
Correct. Right. And of course, it makes sense. The movie came out in 2013,
right.
And it's Christmas 2012.
Yeah. Right. Because the film came out in spring of 2013. Yeah.
But it's interesting because in Spider-Man: Homecoming, they try to correct the timeline in saying that Iron Man 1 did not happen in 2008, but 2010. So does that him saying that that happened 13 years ago screw things up?
Not necessarily, I don't think, because it could easily be 2 years from the first Iron Man to this film.
Yeah. Okay. Now we know that's not how they were released, and
that's how
they were made. But yeah.
But in terms of the timeline of the story, that's certainly possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think he even says something about this only being a few months after the Battle of New York.
The New York, right?
Right. So if that was earlier in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Certainly,
yeah.
Iron Man 1 could have been 2010, and Iron Man 2 could have been 2011 easily. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the timeline makes sense. At least in this movie, it gels.
Yeah. Okay. And then I liked it when Happy quits being Iron Man's bodyguard, and he goes to be the head of security for our Stark Industries.
Badge.
He's going nuts on the badge. Yeah. He goes, in the comic books, Tony Stark has a secretary, is Agus something other. All of a sudden, I'm drawing a blank, and I didn't write the name down.
I wrote that one.
And here, he's when Happy's going around, going, badge, 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 he goes, Abigail, badge. And I went, they dropped her in there. They, you don't see her on screen, but
they dropped her name.
They just dropped her. Yeah, that's right. He does say that.
And I went, oh my God, that's funny. And I love it when he's holding up his tablet and he goes, and when Tony calls in and he goes, he says, who is this? The head, the forehead of security?
Because right.
Yes.
Right. It's just the forehead.
He's got the camera up by his forehead.
And again, I was kind of chuckling as I'm looking, man, that tablet looks really old school, but it's not old school, but compared to what I have.
And then I like it with
6 years ago. Now,
no, I know, so. I know. I'm just saying it is kind of clunky compared.
It's only been 6 years. Huh?
Again,
that's a lifetime in technology.
Yeah, remember? I mean, the first iPad came out in 2010.
Really?
Right. I think even overseas, right, listeners?
Mm-hmm.
So at least in North America, yeah, the first iPad.
And technology is generations is every 18 months.
Right. Because I remember going to see Avatar, and they had those see-through tablets.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading when I right after I saw Avatar at the theater in IMAX, of course, that tablets are coming next year. I'm like, oh my God, when I get that tablet, we didn't get the see-through tablets, but you know, I was all geeked up for that.
The very first tablet in a movie was in 2001.
The film 2001?
Mm-hmm.
Which was 1968. So
yes. Right. Well, again, I keep thinking, at least in the modern times, and I think both of you correct me, I always think of Star Wars Episode One when they're watching the pod race, they have a tablet.
I would say actually before that would be
Star Trek Next Generation. Because they have what are they call
tablets.
Pads.
They had tablets.
The ADD.
Right. Then the TV show.
So that's late 80s, early 90s.
That's true.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
So there we go.
Technology jog.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Happy does a dig, and I love this because it's a tip to DC Comics. He goes, and he says, he says, I just didn't want to hang around with those guys because there's a whole bunch of super friends.
He saw, no, you've been hanging out with the super friends.
The super
you've been
friends,
busy
right.
hanging out with the super
right,
friends.
Right, because Tony's like picking out like a bottle of wine. He's like, he's about to like dismiss him. He's like, yeah, you know, whatever.
I love how he puts the remote or
the
control
phone,
device
phone
in the
wine freezer.
And he walks away.
Well,
you right.
Oh, hold on. Okay, we had a little technical. Repeat that.
About the okay, so there's also the scene where when he's talking to Happy through the tablet, and he tells him to flip the camera on.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a tech genius like you.
Right. Which again, this is you know,
and then he actually physically flips the tablet around.
And again, it's 2013. I mean, people have tablets, but people just aren't used to this. I mean, now we think it's second nature. It's no big deal.
I thought he was pretty smart by taking a picture of the car so he can get the license plate. Instead of writing it down. For somebody that's low tech, that was pretty smart of him.
That's just you're taking a photo. You know, if you're head of security, Patrick, you have to think like a security guy.
Think of the year and all that
stuff. I know.
Just they show more about the Mandarin and all this stuff. I'm still thinking that the Ten Rings. There's more to it than what was shown in the films
They talk a lot about it and if I remember properly I felt like I never got the Ten Rings explained why. I know it's discussed, it's brought up, and I don't know, I just that was always like a mystery part to me.
The Ten Rings that the Mandarin wore.
You keep saying Mandarin.
Mandarin. Like the language.
Yes, but the rings had its own power. These were alien rings, and each one had a special power.
Right. It's so just again, you know. Now, I mean, what's the red ring? I wanted the stones. You get an eventual explanation. You know, is this one for the night? Mm-hmm. Is this for the darkness? You know, but yeah,
it's
kind of glossed over. I mean, there's plenty of action to move along.
But one of the Easter eggs is that one of the rings he's wearing is the same one that the guy in the first Iron Man had, one of the Ten Ring members. So
yes.
So they did make that connection,
okay.
But it's just with an Easter egg. They didn't explain it or anything, but they did make a connection.
They did it and moved on real quick. Now, PSVD, the giant bunny. I loved. Gave the address to Tony Stark.
Yes, yeah, right, right. So after
10880 Malibu Road.
Malibu Drive.
Malibu Drive.
That was after the explosion at the Chinese theater.
Right, so Happy gets injured severely.
He's leaving the hospital, and the paparazzi are all there.
Right, and the press is there, and the one guy with the phone in his face, which is already kind of happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, he's obviously...
Yeah,
he's, he's out for revenge, and he says it. You know, here's my address coming.
Well, even before that, the guy who's the reporter, it says, well, are you going to kill him?
Right.
Aren't you going to kill him? Tell us. Aren't you going to kill him?
Right, right. They're like egging him on, basically.
Right. And then he says something like, you know, you think you're a man, you're not a real man.
Yeah. Right.
I'm, you know, I live at, was it 1088 Malibu Drive? And he gives the zip code.
Yeah, and the zip, and the whole
what is it again? All right, so
10880.
You know, you're going to see what, if there's anybody really there?
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Malibu. I went to Malibu myself. I mean,
and they do mention the Roxanne Oil Corporation in here too.
Mandarin.
Does been Roxanne Oil is the ones that originally made Deathlock in the comics.
Oh, so a little tip to the hat there.
Yeah, because Death. Oh, this happens during the same first season as Marvel Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is airing. So the Deathlock isn't introduced until second.
No, he's introduced in the first season.
In the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So they mentioned Roxanne here first. Deathlock appears on the TV show in the same year. So, you know, that's. And then the kid goes, suggests, why don't you have a stealth armor? And he goes, yes. Oh, that's a good idea. And so that's one of the armors that was Bob Layton worked on in the comic books. And it was a beautiful armor. And that's one that you never see in the comic, I mean, in the movies. Yeah. So far.
But we haven't gotten to the kid yet, so we're jumping.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
sorry.
There is a Malibu Road in Malibu, California, which is kind of like there's Pacific Coast Highway, which is Highway 1, which
right.
is what most people take. Uh-huh. That's the big commercial thing that I drove down. And Malibu Road is the last road next to the beach. But there is no address of 10880. There could be, but there's no, like, house.
10880?
Yeah, there is no address. There's homes along the beach, and I can't, again, everybody could use Google Maps or Apple Maps. Or Yahoo Maps, it's right next to a park, so they probably just pick an address where you know there's.
Well, they usually would do a fictional address
right.
anyway.
So. And again, I mean, obviously, like we know, there's always fictional phone numbers, at least
right.
in U.S.
Five,
movies,
5-5-5-1-2-3-4,
what have you. And I'm sorry, this is something that has kind of always gotten to me when they do biblical quotes in movies, that they say like you know Leviticus. Chapter 1, 25, they're never correct. Is that something that they do on purpose? I mean,
fake brand names and things like that. There is certain ones that they use in films.
That they always
so that way you're not offending anybody.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, just something that
like phone numbers. Like if they gave a real phone number, then that person would be getting all these crank calls,
calls
all the
right.
time. But there is why was it? Is it Atomic Blonde? There's some movie that came out recently.
Well, there was going to be one in Infinity War.
A real phone number?
A real phone number. It
really?
Because remember, there's the phone number that that Tony's calling or texting to Steve Rogers on.
Okay.
So they were going to make that a real number and have it like have a voicemail with Chris Evans' voice on
now
it.
Now that would be cool.
But
that
they decided
would be really
against it. But.
Yeah, this probably crashed the server or whatever.
Right.
People overseas would be calling, you know.
Well, I forgot. It wasn't Atomic Blonde. It was some trailer of some movie. There was a phone number that was in a phone booth that was painted on there.
Mm-hmm.
And you called it. It would actually be the like information about that movie.
Oh, that's cool. That's
yeah.
cool. I like
but,
that.
But somebody found it recently, pulled it up, and called it. It's now a porn number.
Of course, because they bought the rights to it.
Well, they let the rights to the phone number expire.
And they picked it up, sure.
Okay, back to Iron Man 3.
Right, Iron Man 3, right. No more religious stuff, no more porn sites, right.
So,
you can look those up on your own after you finish the podcast.
Yes. Now, okay, so he threatens him. He goes back there.
Right.
The girlfriend from the flashback shows up, and she goes, I think my boss is, you know, is from
AIM. She tells that to Pepper later.
Okay.
So she comes to...
Banging on the door.
Right. She comes banging on the door. And at first, Tony pretends like he doesn't remember her. And then when Pepper comes down, he says her name. Like,
yeah.
This is my botanist friend, he calls her.
My botanist friend. Loosely. It's a loose description, but
yeah.
Okay. You can go with it.
And she's like, what's this? Is this normal? And she's pointing towards the giant bunny. And it's just like, yeah, well, that's normal for us.
Right.
Yeah.
The Playboy billionaire philanthropist. What's the whole
yeah.
thing?
Yeah. Playboy billionaire philanthropist. Yeah.
And I like you know, this movie didn't really have any brands in there, except for Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah, the show. Yeah. There's Happy Likes
The Watch.
Well, Audi's in it. I mean, at the very, very end, I mean, he's driving. I mean, when he leaves the hospital, he's in a white Audi R8, which is a sports car.
I didn't think about the cars.
Well, right. Also the rental car that he, or not, I don't know if it's a rental car, the car he steals that the one the bad guy, the bad one guy. Extremist bad guy that he steals when he's in Tennessee, that's also an Audi.
Okay, that's an Audi. So. And then at the very, very end of the movie, after he's, you know, the house is gone and all that stuff, he like hitches the trailer. He finds some little pieces of like Jarvis and stuff like that. I saw as I was focusing on. He's sitting.
Well, it's Dummy and his friend, the two robots.
Okay, right. And so when he sits down, it's a red Audi R8.
Okay.
But and you can see it in the left hand corner. It says e-tron, which is the.
I wrote that down. Yeah. What is e-tron?
E-tron is the all electric version. It's like the Tesla version of an Audi. So again, all manufacturers want to have hybrids. Mm-hmm. Or
all electric
vehicles. Mm-hmm. And Audi's like brand name. They're, you know, like Quattro. You know, everything's, Audi Quattro. Everybody says, oh, I have a Quattro. No, only Audi Quattro are four-wheel drive systems.
All right.
Right, so that's their name brand. So Audi e-tron is like their all-electric car.
I meant to look that up because I felt like that's a fake brand
name. No. E-tron is a real thing. Actually, yeah. So because Audi has the car sponsorship for Tony Stark.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and then he gives out the address.
Maybe not the smartest thing in the world to do.
No. Right.
and they do harken back to a storyline in the comic book when Tony makes a suit of armor that's so advanced it becomes sentient, and this armor takes him and kidnaps him and stuff. So when the armor is floating above Pepper. Well, in the dream sequence, that kind of harkens back to that storyline in the comics. Okay. So they all the major storylines except for one has hit all three films.
Major comic book storylines
have been hit in the three films.
In the three films, okay.
Yeah, the only one they didn't touch
on. They've at least hinted at them, even if they haven't gone to depth.
Yes, you know something is derived from that because there's 60 years of history, so
you only put so much in for 3 minutes.
And I thought that was a brilliant thing that they did that, and then obviously his house gets attacked.
Big surprise! You get out the address. Come on, people!
All of a sudden, there are these helicopters flying over the ocean, then start firing rockets into the house and
destroys the crap out of it. And then he's able to use his remote that he finally calibrated correctly,
of course,
and protects Pepper, which hints on a recent storyline the last so years of when Pepper gets her own armor and she's called Rescue.
Ah.
Okay, so when they put that on, everybody got excited, like, oh my God, we're going to see Pepper as Rescue. And then she manages to get the girl out of the house.
But he gets the armor on himself and he protects her from the debris falling from the house. Then he puts the armor on her, right?
No. The explosion happens and he motions it, the armor covers her, and then they get separated because of the balcony, the part of the house. He goes, get her out now. And then Jarvis says to her an earpiece, he says, they're clear, sir. And then he pulls it back
to himself, right?
Yeah, he makes sure that she's clear.
And then he pulls it back. She and Maya, the other woman, are both clear of the house at that point. Yes. Yeah.
And then he takes over, and it's still a prototype armor, so it's not quite working right because the flight mode isn't working.
Well, and you keep hearing Jarvis saying, this unit is not combat ready, sir.
Yeah, he's like, stop it. And so the whole house collapses on him, and I thought they were going to do another storyline, and I thought this would have been a great place to introduce Prince Namor, but they didn't have the rights to the Fantastic Four character, Submariner. But he gets out of that mess.
Right.
Of course.
And then, but the thing is that he blacks out.
Right. And so he blacks out, and then the suit takes him
to the last place Tennessee, he told him to.
The last place, because while he was having Jarvis show him the three-dimensional map of all the explosions that have happened, and he finds the one that happened that wasn't related that wasn't one of the Mandarin terrorist attacks, but it was the same heat signature.
Yes.
And that was the one that had happened in Tennessee some months before.
Right. And he goes like, you know, he says like, you know,
and he says, I think he tells Jarvis plot a course to that. And so then when he's in the water, that's just where Jarvis takes him because that's the last
order
he was given. Yeah.
And then he wakes up when he has less than 5% power, and the suit goes down, and he gets
tumbles out, into the field.
You know, yes, and I thought that was great when he sits up out of it, and he goes, "Ooh, brisk."
And again, any reason why? I know you just explained this, that's the last coordinates. Do we know why they just picked Tennessee? Just don't want to pick Tennessee.
Well, see, there was all these terrorist attacks that were that the
Mandarin.
Claimed to do. You know, because something that would happen, he would go on there and go, "Hey, that was me." This one, he never said anything about. Okay.
But it was all the same mark. Well, at least when Jarvis finds his form, it has the same heat signature, the same
blast pattern,
and the temperature of the heat and all of that. So,
so that was the only one that he didn't claim it was his. So therefore, it had to have been the first one.
Well, and also Tony makes the connection even when he's still there with Jarvis. That because the, he says what happened here, and he's, Jarvis tells him that this soldier had committed used a bomb to commit suicide,
right?
And then of course he had already they had found the dog tags at the blast at the theater, and he's like, okay, two military guys, and so he was starting to connect the dots there.
And then that's why he wanted to go there. Eventually, he just got
But he wasn't planning to go there
right from That wasn't the attack. The house blowing up and sinking wasn't part of the
plan.
No. Hopefully, it's. Usually never anybody's part of their plan.
And so he goes there, drakes the armor away, and he's like, I got to get out of the cold. He swipes a blanket from a carved cigar store Indian.
Yes.
And before he, and at the time that he does that, he goes to a phone booth and leaves a voicemail for Pepper.
Yeah, on his system.
On his system. So then later on when she's
digging through all the crap.
She's with the authorities and going through all the damage at the house. And she finds one of the Iron Man helmets. She puts it on, and it starts playing. It recognizes her.
Uh-huh.
It does a retina scan to recognize her, and then starts playing the message for her.
Yeah, because she sees it's blinking. It's like a voicemail call light in the helmet. It's blinking, and evidently she knew what that was. Right.
For our younger listeners, voicemail was something you had a machine for that people left you messages on. Wasn't instant messaging.
Or even before that, it was... an answering machine.
Yes, with a tape.
Right.
The best reference to that is, I'm sure a lot of your listeners would still like the movie Office Space from 1999. He has a physical answering machine.
Or if
I don't know if he has a tape, but he has an answering machine he listens to messages on.
Or if you watch reruns of Seinfeld, there's, of course, the famous episode where George records the answering machine message.
Yes, yeah, right. Now we're going back to the early 90s. Yeah, it's okay.
All right.
We're good. Don't worry. We're still here.
Power is still here.
Okay, so he breaks into a garage in the suburbs of where we landed, and the kid comes home, and he's like, "Who are you?" And he goes, "Well, you know," he goes, "Oh my God, you're Iron Man." He's like, "Shut up, kid."
Well, he doesn't say it at first. I think he's saying, "Are you a?" Doesn't the kid ask him, "Are you a mechanic?"
He asks him some questions first.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then he makes the connection. He tells the kid to be quiet. And he says, "You can call me the mechanic."
And he says, "Well, you're dead anyway." And he shows him the newspaper where it says, you know,
right.
Missing in action.
Tony Stark home or Stark home attacked. Tony Stark missing presumed so, dead.
Right. So most people think he's gone, which is good for him because that provides cover.
Right, he's able to work stealthily.
And then he tells the kid that he needs several things. One of them is a tuna fish sandwich.
Right.
That's at the end. He's like, give me this, and a tuna fish sandwich.
Right. And he ends up getting a digital watch from his younger sister, which is a Hello Kitty watch. And he goes, when I asked for a digital watch, I didn't expect this.
Well, and also when the kid first comes in the garage, the kid has a potato gun.
Yes.
Aimed at him. And he says something to help him soup up the potato gun for him.
Yeah, he goes, your barrel's too long, and it's and then the kid... And he says that it doesn't have any power. And a kid blows off a jar off of a shelf, and he goes, "And you're out of ammo now."
Right. and then when he asks for all those things, the kid says, "Well, why should I do that?" And he said, "What's the name? What's the kid's name?" And he said, "Who?" He said, "The bully who's bullying you at school."
Right.
Because he's assuming that's why he's made the potato gun.
Yeah, right.
And he gives him a little device and says, "Here, use this on him."
He takes it out of the armor.
Right. And he says, "Use this and that on the bully." And that's like his trade for all the things he's
and
asking for the kid.
What's the little thing?
Well, he winds up using it in a fight later. The kid uses it in a fight with the bad guys. Yeah.
And then so he goes.
Doesn't it have like a flare or something in?
Well, I think it's in the comics because he uses that several times in the comics. It's almost like a power pack.
Right.
Okay. Because he uses it near the end when he throws it. No, he uses it during when the copters attack, because he flings one at the copter and he sets it off and it explodes and takes out the first copter.
So
and
like goes, a flare or some sort of incendiary device.
Well, yeah, it's just a highly...
It looks like pressure. A large bullet when yeah. he shows right. it to the yeah. head.
It's just like a battery under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And he blows it up. And
Lithium-ion battery?
That type of thing.
Yeah.
And he tells the kid to press the button at the top, but don't look at it when you do that.
Right. But when he asks for all those things, and he gives the kid the little device, and then he says, I don't see my sandwich. Where's my sandwich? You know?
they go to the crater. And obviously, the kid explains his father's not around, and then he gives Tony, apparently, his dad's clothes. And he goes to the crater site. He investigates it. There's the blast marks. Everything's the same. He has another... panic attack.
But the other thing he noticed with the blast marks, he says, wait, six people here died, including the soldier who committed the bomber. There's only five blast marks.
Right.
And that's where he starts to begin to figure out that the soldier was the bomb.
Yeah.
It is
a bomb, not a bomb.
Right. Like in the man's Chinese.
Right. But remember, he wasn't there, so he didn't know that's what happened in man's Chinese.
Right. He wasn't physically there.
And so the kid tells him that the legend there is that the people who died and went to heaven have a blast mark, and the soldier with the bomber went to hell. That's why he doesn't have a shadow there. That was burned on
right. Yeah, the explainer, so to speak.
And then he asks the kid some questions and finds out the mom of the soldier is still around. And he goes to the bar to talk to her. And she hands him a folder and he goes, I'm not the one that you were supposed to talk to, am I? And the lady, he bumps into a lady as he goes in there. She's got some scars on her face. That is a character from the comic book. I neglected to look that up, who she was. But that is that was another character they pulled from Iron Man comics.
The character in the film was named Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah.
And so he bumps into her, goes in there, talks to the mom. He goes, you know, he didn't commit suicide. I know that for a fact. And then that lady comes in with a fake badge and goes, I'm arresting you.
Yeah.
And puts him in handcuffs. And he goes, and then he's like, no, this isn't working. You know, you're not who you are. The sheriff of the town goes like, I need proof of all this, and everything goes to hell. And she starts blasting everything apart because she has part of the extremis formula in her too.
Right, right.
And now before she arrives there, when the mother hands Tony the file, what he notices right away, there's a picture of her son and then a picture of another soldier, and it's the name of the soldier who exploded at the Chinese theater.
Los Angeles.
He's seeing all the pieces starting to come into play. Yeah.
And so he manages to get away from her. He manages to take her down, gets out of the handcuffs, but the other guys that were with her, they go after him and they try to take him out.
When she flashes the badge, there's a local sheriff there in the bar, and he's like, hold on, wait a minute, you know, and he's like, do I need to call Nashville to find out what you're doing? Because she flashes her badge, and then she actually heats up the badge.
Makes a weapon out of it
and, like, burns the sheriff to get away. And
everything goes to hell because they're blasting through the town. He blasts through another, like, I guess a little diner across because he throws himself through the window. She goes through there. He gets away by blowing up the kitchen.
He unhooks the gas line, and then shoots something at her.
He sets off the microwave.
Sets off the microwave with the metal in there,
and it explodes, and then boom, everything goes. And he manages to get cornered, but the kid gets involved now and throws snowballs at him, and then the extremist soldier grabs the kid and he says like, okay, Tony, I will take him out if you don't tell me where the file is and all this stuff. And Tony goes, remember what to do with the bully? And then the kid sets the device off. And then he manages to take him out too. And that's where he gets the car keys.
Right. So he gets the car keys from the soldier, and then he walks back to the car, and then he tells the kid that he's going to be leaving him now. And then
the kid tries to play it, and he goes like, you're really gonna be
it's so cold. I'm so cold.
And he goes, yep. And then he leaves, and she goes, well, I give it a try. So, and then he calls Rhodes. And he goes like, you know, where are you? And he goes, well, I'm in the Middle East now because...
Well, he calls Rhodey, and Rhodey's in the suit.
Yes, in the Middle East.
Right. And of course, we should mention that in this film, they have changed War Machine's name to the Iron Patriot.
And
painted the armor red, kind of like Cap's uniform. It's like
it looks a lot like it's like a metallic version of
Captain America's uniform. Yeah. Right.
Right, the Iron Patriots.
Yes.
Right, kind of like the Iron Giant. See, they couldn't call him the Iron Giant, because that's the movie.
But then, but also Tony's giving Rhodey grief about it earlier in the film. It's a terrible name.
Right.
And Rhodey says, well, it was tested well with focus groups.
Focus groups, right. Well, I mean, let's see, War Machine is very pejorative. It's very negative. It's very warmongering, where Iron Patriot
sounds.
And he's, like, breaking down doors because they think that they found where the Mandarin's hiding, and
Mandarin. Just let us.
I'm hungry.
Because I think isn't he chasing the IPs from where the signal was coming from?
Yes.
And they keep going from place to place to place, and he's like, Tony, I'm busy right now, and he's like,
he finds a bunch of women in burkas who are making sewing sportswear. It's like a sweatshop, basically.
Right. Yeah, basically. And one of them is...
one of the extremist soldiers,
soldiers, and she manages to take him down and get the armor.
Yep.
So now they have the pieces they wanted, and then they obviously, they have him go... what's his name again?
Killian
get in the armor and slip in to the president's Air Force One because they want him.
Right, yeah.
Right, now before all that, though, too, after everything that happened at Tony's house, so the other woman, Maya, is with Pepper, and so she tells Pepper that she thinks her boss is working for the Mandarin, and she says, "Who's your boss?" And she says, "Aldrich Killian, Red AIM, da-da-da," and then they're in the hotel, and then Killian shows up, but he then kidnaps Pepper. Yes.
Right. Well, also, at the end of the man's Chinese theater bombing in Hollywood, you know, there's always the video that they take, you know, the bomber, the terrorist takes credit, and he says in there, I'm coming for you, Mr. President. So, I mean, you know, Mandarin's already foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah. These are my last two lessons.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, he's already saying after that bomb, you know, we're coming after the President of the United States, basically.
And then we do also see where Killian is talking about, he's referring to the Mandarin as the master.
Yes.
And that they're going to be filming the video there, but we're still under the impression that the Mandarin is the one who's in charge.
Pulling all the strings.
Right, that's
the
impression.
And this is in Florida, so.
Well, Tony uses the one, he needs to get information, that's why he calls Rhodey, and he gets, because he wants his name and password, which is War Machine 68, and the password machine is War Machine Rocks, R-O-X. Yeah.
Yes.
In all caps.
Okay.
And he says, I have to keep changing it every time I give it to you.
This is crazy.
But Tony goes into a TV truck, remote truck. Truck to access their system, but he doesn't have enough power. So the guy who drives the truck comes in, he sees Tony, he freaks out because he's a big fan of Tony. He's got the goatee and the glasses, and
I base my whole look on you,
and it's terrible. He shows him a tattoo, and he says, "It's a Mexican Scott bio."
and this is where Stan Lee makes his he's a pageant judge,
right? Because the TV crew is there for
some kind of pageant.
And Stan Lee is one of the judges at the pageant,
of course. And so he hacks the system, makes all the connections finally, and goes like, "Oh, they're in Florida."
Well, he calls back to the garage because the kid gets Jarvis up working for him, but Jarvis is having problems with his speech, and he says the wrong word at the end of sentences. And so then he says, "We found it. It's in Miami." And so he's like, "Okay, kid, you gotta. I'm gonna have you reboot Jarvis's language system." He's like, "Or look at the map. Tell me what he's actually showing you." And the kid says, "No, it's Miami, Florida," because he's assuming it's somewhere in Asia.
He's a Middle East terrorist, or he's somewhere overseas.
Yeah, it's not in the U.S. He's not expecting it to be Florida.
So that's when he gets into the stolen car and takes off to Florida, and then Rhodes is in Florida now, but chained up, and he refuses to get out of the armor.
Right.
So Killian.
Well. First, Tony breaks into the house where where everything's being done. He gets past all the security and what have
well,
you.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and that's when he discovers that the Mandarin is really just this out of work actor who's a drug addict.
Oh, and the kid, you know, he has a panic attack while he's driving to Florida. And the kid says, he says, "What can I do to get you out of this?" And he goes, "Like, well, you're a mechanic, don't you build things?" And then he goes, picks up all the stuff and builds two carts
full of stuff at Home Depot. Yeah,
and builds a whole bunch of weapons out of Home Depot. And then when he gets there,
he plows through
and he gets through there and he runs out of stuff and gets taken out.
Right,
he knocked unconscious and he gets chained to a metal bed that's sitting upright. And then Rhodes is in the other part of the house.
Right,
and then he finds out that Pepper has been injected with the Extremis formula, and he's like, "Well, this is the newest version." He says, "Either she'll make it or she'll explode. That's why she's off site."
You know? Right.
Yeah. Oh, and the Extremis formula, we should say that was based on the technology that Maya had developed with the plants, where the plants were able to regrow parts of the plants. And so when Tony hacks into the system in the TV truck, he sees video from when they're doing some of the tests. And so he sees the woman who he bumps into in Tennessee and a couple of the other soldiers. Mm-hmm. And she has, her arm is missing at that point. So these are like wounded soldiers who have missing limbs.
War veterans.
And the Extremis causes their limbs to regenerate.
Which just on that point is a fantastic scientific discovery for soldiers or anybody.
But it's unstable. Like it was with the plant in 1999.
Right. She never figured it out.
And the video that Tony's watching, one of the soldiers actually starts to blow up.
Right.
I think what was implied was that's where Killian starts to get the idea of making that and making the people into
human bombs.
Right.
Well, I think, he was using them, you're missing, or your body's broken, here, we'll give you this, you'll become a super soldier, and then, you just do what we want, because now we've made you whole.
Right,
he doesn't bother telling him that if you use your powers, you'll probably explode.
Right. So, in other words, it's a Faustian bargain, is what he's giving him, but of course, if you lost your arm, you'd listen to almost anybody. I mean, I would think I'm not in that situation, luckily for me. But yeah, you would think most people who lose their limb would gamble. They'd take that chance. Yeah, yeah. I guess I would.
But as long as you don't use your powers, you're good. But everybody ends up using their powers, and then they turn into fireworks.
Because it's unstable. Ultimately, that's a nice way of putting it. They turn into fireworks. It's a little more than that, but that's okay. They're like massively human-sized sparklers.
Yes. And so
Roman candles.
Yes, exactly. And don't forget, Tony's still got the remote controls in his body, and he calls the armor and
from Tennessee to Florida. Right.
So he's going like, okay, how far is that?
How long is it going to take?
Yeah, and he keeps going like, okay, I've timed this, and it should be here. Okay, not there. Okay,
and I'm going to get you now. Yeah,
nothing. And it just, and he finds, they show the kid, and it's because the garage doors are jammed and doesn't let the armor out except there's a broken window. So the gauntlet had gotten through, and everything else is pounding against the door. He opens the door, and the rest of the armor goes. And then, he gets the gauntlet, and he takes out a few of them. He gets a boot. He takes out some more, and he's fighting his way through there as pieces come flying into there. Rhodes, on the other part of the complex, Gillian is, he's got his powers under control. So there's something else going on. It's like,
yeah, I mean, maybe that's a hole in the plot. I mean, okay, he has under control, but obviously he has this raving mad revenge against Tony Stark. So I mean, yeah, it's under control,
I don't know. Could it possibly be maybe he hadn't gotten as much of the Extremis in him because he didn't have any missing limbs, but in the opening scene where they show him in 1999, he does have some kind of physical impairment, like a gaunt or some sort of walk. He's walking with a cane and we see him later in the film, and when it's 2012, he's walking normal.
So
maybe he used it to help correct his physical challenges.
So therefore, he didn't have any missing limbs. So therefore,
he hadn't needed as much.
Become, right. didn't become unstable because nothing was growing back.
It was just corrected.
Just corrected, yeah. So, again, maybe that's the missing link in the plot. But, yeah, obviously, he's got to survive for the final battle.
Right. Well, it would have been really cool if that was the end of it. Blam!
Right, done. Okay. Go home. That's it. End credits after an hour.
But he heats up War Machine's armor to the point where he's got to get out of it or he's going to fry. So he jumps out of it, and he's like, oh, we got the armor now. And so we see War Machine.
Iron Patriot.
Iron Patriot.
You see Iron Patriot landing at Air Force One, and everybody's like, oh, you're here. Great.
Save the day. Not exactly.
Right. It's like nobody asked him to talk. You know, it's just like, oh, you're here. What happened? You know, you never hear that. You know, it's just, he's like, hi, and he's like waving. And it's like, oh, your cat got your tongue? You know, just, so he gets on board the plane and they take off and he's just wandering around the plane. It's like, don't you want to sit down? You want to talk to us about it? Do you want to be debriefed? And it's just, nobody ever asks him anything.
Right, but at the same time, if there's a super soldier, or a very high level soldier in this, you know, the most technologically advanced, defense machinery. Right. I'd be kind of, you know, gobsmacked myself constantly. Right. At least for the very few, you know, for a few times I'd see it.
Now, the Iron Patriot then turns on everybody and kills everybody, gets the president, and then he takes off. And
right.
Yeah,
and kidnaps the president. Yes, that's right.
And Iron Man shows
sounds
up.
Sounds like Air Force One, the movie?
Yeah.
It's a little bit different.
And then, you know, then Iron Man shows up, and then to distract him, he blows a hole in the plane, and 13 people go flying out.
Yep.
Now, it was 13 years between 1999 and the plot. There's 13 people that fell out of the plane,
correct.
And there was another 13 in there. So I'm going like, why is this 13? Is there something significant? I couldn't find anything else that talks about 13 or the reason behind 13. So 13 people fell out of the plane.
Okay, let me stop you. What, Ethan, number movie is this in our series of 20?
Seven.
20 minus 7 is?
Well, they were planning to have more than 20 films.
Mathematics, ladies and gentlemen.
It works.
Okay.
But so they filmed this sequence over, I think it was like 2 months to get the 13 things, you know, the people and everything, because they all had mini parachutes underneath their suits and everything. These were all professional skydivers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, they
Yeah, no, I don't, all right, Patrick, I don't think they use extras to drop out of a plane. I hope not. Yeah.
Sure.
Here, sign this waiver. You're non-union for a day part. Oh, by the way, we're dropping out of a plane. Bye.
Yeah.
Here's your money now up front. Right.
Why do you give it to me now?
I also don't think they're going to use union actors to just throw them out of
the plane. No, I don't think right now.
And the armor, you know, Jarvis says, like, you could only carry 4 people. And so he goes around, and as he grabs people, he puts a mild electric shock through them. He says, grab the next person. You're going to get a shock, and you're not going to be able to put your hand. And
yeah, so right, because the suit can only carry so much.
Right. And so they do it
so
to
he makes
point,
like a chain of people.
Yeah, you know, like as he calls it, the barrel of monkeys.
Right.
And then, if I remember right, that they nicknamed the skydiving group
the barrel of monkeys. Sure.
And so,
which is also a famous kids' toy.
Yes. Right. They still have that at Target.
Oh, yeah. It's a classic.
I love it. And so he managed to get him to the point where he lands him in the water, and he's basically overtaxing the suit.
Right.
So, and then he goes after them, and he find out why, you know, he goes flying over a bridge, gets hit by a truck.
And the suit comes apart.
Yes. Right. And you're like,
he's remote controlling the suit.
Yes. And because he's on a boat going to the location where the president's at and where Pepper's at, actually.
Right.
He goes after Pepper.
Right, Pepper,
and then
but by default, the president's there as well.
He finds
out
it's this big Roxanne
oil
rig type of thing.
Ship, yeah, tanker.
Okay.
And they're loading it full of oil and gas and all these open things because they're going to broadcast the president being fried in the Iron Patriot suit, which is chained up.
He's now the occupant of the Iron Patriot suit, which is the irony of ironies if he burned up in it.
Yeah, and so the Iron Man suit is now spread all over the highway, and so Tony doesn't have a suit. Rhodes has got weapons with him. They sneak onto this thing with guns. and they're like, okay, well, now we're
no armor.
No armor.
Right.
But harking back to Iron Man 2 again, mm-hmm. what does he do? He tells Jarvis to, what's it?
Oh. What do you call it? The something program.
The part.
Shoot,
I didn't write it down. The clean, so Chris,
that's the final program.
Blah, 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 that's, okay. Extremis forehead, blah, blah, blah. No, I didn't write it down, but he calls it something like the party. You know, something right. party.
Tweet us, listeners, what we're missing here.
Yes.
We can put it in the comments later.
Yes, right. We can do that. And so he Jarvis goes, really? Okay. And then they go back to his destroyed mansion in California.
Correct.
And the laboratory opens up, and every single suit of armor goes flying out. Now, earlier in the movie, I forgot to mention this, he looks at his forearm, and it shows MK-42.
Right, 42, yes.
Mark 42.
Mark 42. So the ones that he injects all the remotes into his body is Mark 42.
Correct.
Okay.
So I think when he's experimenting early in the movie, you know, early in one of the early scenes, I think he actually looks, and it shows MK-42.
Yes.
I think, yeah, I see
on
it.
The forearm.
Right. Well, I think also on the suit, though. Somehow he checks the suit. He goes, oh, okay, it's MK-42. Or at least you see it in a scene. I mean, I remember watching it, seeing MK-42.
I thought it was on his forearm on the suit.
Okay, okay.
But yeah, so we know that he's gone through 42 variations of the suit.
So now, this is 41 upgrades.
Yes.
Right.
But since
because at the beginning, Pepper says, what is that, number 8? And he's like, yeah, something like that. looks at the 42 and says, yeah, something like that.
Right, there, yeah, that's where it's from. Right.
Now, remember, the first one was in the cave. That was Mark 1. The silver one was Mark 2. The gold one was Mark 3. The red and gold one was Mark 4.
From Iron Man, the original Iron Man. Right, yeah, exactly. So he's already, that was already 4-in-1 movie, basically. Which
makes
sense.
But now we're up to 42.
Right. Well, it gets worse.
He's not sleeping a lot, so he's tinkering a lot.
Right.
Yes. So now, you know, he calls them all into battle, and they all show up. Now, you see every single variation, and every single one of those so far has appeared in a comic. Every single one you see on the screen is close to a story.
Because as the battle starts raging, as they're fighting
the soldiers,
right, they're all kind of, you know, some have like look like guns on their arms, some are more like the Super Iron Man outfit. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different like head pieces. Some are more square, some are rounded.
There was a hint at the Hulkbuster armor, and that was the one when the starts collapsing.
Yes,
the giant one goes underneath.
I thought that was the Hulkbuster, but that's what it looked like to me.
It was like the very first one.
Okay,
it's like a prototype
version. Sure.
Yes, and so that one's holding up everything. And
well, now we know it's the Hulkbuster because we've seen the other movie, but we didn't necessarily know that. But yeah. All these suits that are attacking and helping.
All from different storylines or anything. Obviously, he doesn't have a stealth one in the movie, but he had one in the comics, and he had an Aqua one, which was basically like a subsuit that he would put his Iron Man, his regular suit in there, and it would be like a little mini sub.
Okay.
And you didn't see that. Those two didn't show up in the film.
Well, we're not underwater.
And so they all get destroyed one way or another as the battles are going on. And he keeps jumping into one. That one gets destroyed. And he goes like, oh, come on. And he jumps into another one.
Well, the AIM soldiers, if I can call them that, I mean, you know, they're not dumb. They're realizing if you pull off the mask and like the brain part, you know, that kind of disables the suit.
And they can't handle the high temperatures or their blasts. And
correct. So
you know, it's just a matter of how many suits versus how many soldiers.
It's a very intense action. I mean, this is a very busy.
Oh yeah, there's
a lot of moving parts. You know, there's obviously the president's in peril. He's looking for Pepper Potts. Mm-hmm. Rhodey's there. He's there. You know, Killian's, you know, obviously part of the whole mix.
Yes.
It's a very, very.
And they get to Pepper. Yes. And she falls.
Well, yeah, because he actually, like, he like, shoots or something, or he, like, ducks or something. And one of the Iron Man suits, like, crashes into, I think, the container where she's at or something, and she falls,
right?
And like, it's like hanging, and the Killian's there. It's like, it's crazy.
And he sees her fall, and so everybody, even I thought, when the first time I saw this, I thought, oh crap, they killed her off. Well, it's the third movie, they're done.
Oh, you mean like the very end when she goes into the fire?
Yeah, she falls and falls. I thought she was done.
Right, I'm watching it as he tries to, you know, he's about to save her, he thinks, and then she goes. I mean, she doesn't, like, miss. I mean, it just, she falls into
and
the fire.
And I expected a piece of, right. Another armor to come grab her. That didn't happen. Yeah, didn't happen. She falls right into the fire.
Rhodey's not, there's and no super, there's no extra.
So Tony really thinks she's dead at that
point. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then so, you know, so now he has nothing
And he's
left.
In rage. You can tell he's miffed.
So he goes after, you know.
Killian with a vengeance, an extra
and
vengeance.
And he has nothing left to lose.
Right.
At this point. They
so
beat
it's
the
all,
crap
it's
out of
all
each
or nothing. It's, yes. it's, you know, mano a mano.
Right.
No question about it.
And I like it when he gets him in the armor because Mark 42 shows
up. Well, okay, so right. So let's break this down. So, of course, I get it. The love of his life, Pepper Potts, Gwyneth Paltrow. We can't, you know, we can't fight him on that one. Is dead. I mean, I when I first saw it at the theater,
yeah, I thought they pulled another Agent Coulson.
Yeah, I said, how do you, you know, a woman of flesh and blood, right? A woman of flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. First of all, how do you survive a 200-foot drop?
Fire,
and then into fire. You're gone. I mean, you're gone. I mean, even if you somehow survive the fall, you're going to burn up, right? So gone. So he's enraged. He's en fuego. But I kept thinking, you know, because he's jumping out of various suits. Because I mean, this guy's tough, right? I mean, he has like he goes ejects out of the suit. He chops the head off. I kept thinking, how is he going to beat this guy? Because he hasn't beaten him yet.
Well, yeah, right? He's running out of suits.
You know, well, it's the suit thing, but I'm still thinking, even if he had the suit that held up, you know, the Hulkbuster,
the prototype,
right.
still,
but
how
and
would
also,
that defeat it,
and even,
this guy?
And even some of the shots, you know, he's throwing Killian into the gas and oil and everything.
But, and he's
fine,
right,
because he's like on fire.
Well, so. In essence, and I just thought
so
of it.
Seems like indestructible almost.
And he's not... becoming unstable.
No, right? Exactly.
He's still using his powers,
Tony slashed his arm off, and
just grow right back.
Right,
exactly.
I mean, this Killian's...
maybe that's why he exploded at
right,
the end,
right,
because
Killian's,
he finally had to grow something back.
Right, Killian's character is a lot like the T-1000 in Terminator 2. Remember? Schwarzenegger, the T-101 Cyberdyne Systems, is trying to kill the new guy, and there's no way to kill him because he keeps
regenerating
and coming back.
But he does. He takes the last armor that is functional, because they're still fighting. There's still a handful of
right, there's still
sky.
Some fights
going on. The closest one he's able to get to is the 42. He sends it to Killian.
Right. And he puts Killian in the suit. Right.
And he...
Blows it up.
Right, and blows him into pieces, into smithereens. Right,
and so you think it's gone, right?
You think he's gone, right? Because well,
just like every other horror movie ever made, the trope is that the bad guy always becomes.
Well,
bad.
I'll tell you this. I thought, oh, thank God, but then I go, wait, but in Terminator, it still comes back. Mm-hmm. But then of course, Tony thinks he's gone. We all, everything's dramatic.
But
so then you know,
Pepper comes
out of the fire too.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like,
shit. But why is her clothes still there? She just got through in a...
Patrick, you know the answer. Two words, Patrick. You know the answer. Hollywood magic.
Right. It's called suspend your disbelief.
Exactly.
Even Killian's clothes didn't
burn. Correct, right.
They didn't burn.
Well, they're kind of like crispy.
Well, they're shredded.
But they're not completely gone.
Hollywood magic.
Well, they also want to keep it a PG-13,
13
right?
movie, right, so. Exactly, right. So
can
we
see an uncut version of this?
Yeah,
show?
That would be nice. Yeah,
but anyway, so she saves
Gwyneth
the Paul day
chose on because conversion.
she puts the gauntlet on,
takes him out entirely.
Yeah.
And then she immediately reacts like, oh my God, I killed somebody.
Right, what did I do?
What did
right.
I do? Yeah.
And what have I become?
I can understand why you like this so much or something. Or,
yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah. She said, right, I understand why. No, I understand why you keep tinkering.
You're tinkering.
Right. I mean, it's Pepper Potts, really, she's the innocent. I mean, she's not innocent, but she's never killed anybody.
She's also not... that end of it. She hadn't experienced any of that. She's never been in the battlefield.
Right, plus
she's always watched it.
Right, plus she's enraged too, but she was just thrown off this thing.
Yeah,
by
and she also got this thing going coursing through her system, so tick, 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 tick. She can go off in any second. And so they hug, they kiss, Rhodey
protects the president, takes the president away in the
Iron Patriot
suit. So that's taken care of.
Yeah, so they're out of the picture. And then...
Right.
And then he goes like, okay, and then Rhodey's Jarvis asks, you know, what do you want to do now? Right. And he goes, well, go ahead and do it, Jarvis. And he goes, you mean the clean slate protocol?
Clean slate protocol.
And so he takes out the rest of the suits. So now all 42 suits are completely
gone. And it's like a fireworks show.
Right.
For him
it's like a Christmas fireworks show, right?
So now they're all gone. So, okay, he's got the girl back. All the suits are gone. His mansion's gone.
Right.
So what's
left? The next step? Well,
then the end sequence, which is
we see him being operated on. Right. They remove the shrapnel from his heart,
and
so he no longer needs the arc reactor. They also do something to treat Pepper to get the extremis out.
He goes, yes, I dealt with this in 1999. I took care of it, so he removes that from her system.
Correct. So he's cured, so to speak, and she's cured.
So the very last scene, he's at the ruins of the house.
Right.
He has a little paper bag with him. It's the arc reactor. He flings that over the cliff into the ocean.
Right. And he drives away with the two robots and his Audi.
Right. And doesn't he say I'm Iron Man?
Yes.
What I read was that originally in the script he was going to say I'm Tony Stark, as like he was leaving Iron Man behind, but they decided to go with Iron Man to be, you know,
symmetry from the first one.
Well, yeah, but also it's symmetry, but also he's appearing in other movies. I mean, this is not the swan song.
Well, they weren't sure if he was going to, because this is the end of his contract
at this point. He's renewed four times. This was the end of the first contract.
Right. And so originally, I was reading there was going to be a post-credit sequence where he would have gone into space and met the Guardians. Because then Iron Man was going to have a cameo in the first Guardians film. Okay. But at that point, Downey wasn't sure if he wanted to keep playing Tony. So
they nixed the scene.
So they nixed the cameo. They nixed the post credit sequence.
And there is a post credit sequence without the Guardians,
Tony is finishing, because the whole at the beginning of the film he's like he's narrating, he's telling a story.
Right.
He's finishing up the story, and then he looks over and Banner is sitting there. Banner has like falling asleep.
And he drops his glasses,
and he says, are you asleep? He's like, oh, I just kind of nodded off a little bit. And he says, well, where did you leave off at? And he said, you were in an elevator in Switzerland, which is the very beginning of the story. So
basically, the entire movie is a flashback to Bruce Banner, is what
to a sleeping Bruce Banner. Tony's telling the story, but Banner's asleep the whole time.
Right.
So now it's the after credit sequence does not speak of something that's coming forward.
Right. So it's the first of the films to have an after credit sequence that doesn't, you know,
foreshadow another film.
Let me rewind
for a second from the Bruce Banner thing. The last scene, you know, at his when he throws the arc reactor.
Right.
It's almost an epic like Western. Because, I mean, he's not riding off into the sunset, because he's actually going away from the ocean. But he's riding off with his car,
right,
with a little trailer worth of stuff, and he says, "I am Iron Man." Mm-hmm. It's a true finale, which is strange
because all superhero stories are always Act Two. There's never an Act Three, which closes the story.
Right.
And this gave you the impression.
Yeah, this
Act
is
three.
This could be it. I remember
when I first saw this film, I was like, okay, are we done with Iron Man? He's no longer going to be Iron Man anymore.
Because obviously it's 2013 or 2012, not 1870. He's going to ride off on a horse. He's riding off on his iron horse.
They finished everything.
But I even thought with them taking the... I was thinking in my head, well, they took the arc reactor out, so does he no longer need to be Iron Man? Is he no longer going to be put in
well,
the
that's
suit?
What, that, that's
the suits
what I
are think. All destroyed. He doesn't have the arc reactor.
Right.
Is he just going to go back to running Stark Industries?
Yes.
Right. So he does ride off into the sunset, and that's what I'm getting at. This Hollywood trope of westerns, you know, the cowboy
they put
an excellent bow on. Yes, he goes, but he's taking his robots with him, so there's a little hint. But in essence, if there's a time and place to close it, this is one of the best ways.
If Downey hadn't signed an extension and this had been his last film,
it would have been a good way to go.
It would have been done. And therefore, you know, Disney's thinking that Marvel's thinking that. Robert Downey Jr.'s thinking this. Is that they're like, okay, we're done. We've
made our money. We've done very well for ourselves.
We've tied up all the storylines. Yes, and at that point, they used all the major storylines except for
So how do you top it? How do you do that? How do you improve?
Well, they can use other. There's like two or three major storylines.
But they could come up with original story ideas too.
But again, like you said, I mean, you know the comics. I didn't read Iron Man in comics, so. What you're both saying is they've touched on all the major plot points. Like I said, it's the most nicest bow with the nicest wrapping paper they can come up with.
And then they've mentally closed this down, and they're looking towards the future, which happens in this happened in April. The next one comes out in November, which is
Thor 2, the Dark World. Right.
And so now everybody's looking forward. And since this is phase two, they're no longer worried about world building. Now they're dropping all these little things in here, like Easter eggs and things like the Roxanne and AIM. They're putting all these little seeds in there.
Right.
Marvel Agent of Shield's out.
Correct.
Marvel Agent of Shield's introducing all these characters from the comic books. Deathlok, all these other characters. So they're just throwing all these things down, going like, we're planting all these seeds. Let's see what grows. And now they're looking towards Thor. Because they're done with their first trilogy.
Yep.
Which we're going to take up next week.
Yes, sir.
All right. So is this a buy, rent, or stream? Or a buy, stream, or skip?
Buy, stream, or skip.
I own the DVD. I saw it at the theater, and I bought it as soon as it came out on DVD. I have the Blu-ray and the regular DVD.
Now, out of the three, which is your... Which is your first, second, and third out of the three Iron Men?
Oh.
Because this is the first trilogy. Now, while you're thinking about that, Ethan, is this a buy, stream, or skip?
It's definitely not a skip. I would say either a stream or a buy. I'm kind of on the fence on that.
Okay. All right. Now, Larry.
I put them in order.
Yeah. Best to least.
Best to least. Number one is the best, so okay. Iron Man 1 is 1, mm-hmm. Iron Man 3 is 2, and Iron Man 2 is 3. Even though I love Mickey Rourke, but... Yeah.
Okay.
See, Iron Man 2 might be my favorite of the three.
Okay.
Because I just remember the first time I saw it because it was introducing the other characters. Hammer. Before that, Fury had had a couple of cameos, but he was a more fully formed character
in
Iron Man 2, and the introducing Black Widow. So I like 2 a little bit better. It also brought in War Machine.
Yes.
So I prefer 2. I think all 3 of them are good. So it's hard to rank them. I would probably rank 2 first, then maybe 1, then 3.
2, 1, 3.
Yeah.
I am going to go in order.
We don't want your opinion, Patrick, but thank you anyway.
Okay. In order of release, 1 is 1, 2 is 2, and 3 is 3 for me. And I'm saying it's a buy.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
So we're going to pick this up next week with Thor
Dark World.
Thor 2 The Dark World, yes.
Okay, I'm Patrick.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ethan.
And
where to find you.
Yes, where to find us. Especially you, Patrick. Don't do that.
Yeah, so you can find us at geekculture.online. You can go to our Facebook at geekcultureonline. Like our Facebook page. Instagram at geekcultureonline.
Follow the Instagram page.
Yes, please. Please do. And our favorite at Twitter at
Your Geek Culture. Tweet us.
Follow us there.
Tweet, retweet, and respond.
Yes, and you can find us all the podcasts on the website, and as well as iTunes, Google Podcasts,
Apple Podcasts,
Stitcher,
Spotify,
any place you're able to get your podcasts.
Or go to the website and listen to them there. I've done it myself. It's very easy, listeners.
Subscribe, remark, and like.
Yes, please.
All right. And until next week,
bye-bye.